Talked about a lot of the bills that are moving through the General Assembly this week, especially with the crossover date coming up. And again, as we mentioned, that's the semi-artificial deadline, but it's one that legislators try to stick to, where if a bill hasn't passed one or the other house by the time you hit that date, it'll just get shelved for the rest of the session. So a lot of activity this week in the General Assembly. We talked about the impact fee bills. Those passed the State House last hour. There's a lot of other bills that are also moving through, including one, HB 527. This is the Restore / Preserve Campus Free Speech Bill. It's restore or preserve, depending on how bad you think the situation has gotten, which is making its way through the General Assembly still. And this is in the context of, obviously, a lot of clashes and protests that have taken place on campuses around the country, including most notably Berkeley recently over the Milo Yiannopoulos. We've got Ashley Campbell here in the studio right now to talk about all this.
That's
Yiannopoulos, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and then Ann Coulter more recently, and Richard Spencer in Auburn, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a national issue. Bill's moving through the General Assembly, and we have Ashley Campbell here in the studio, Orange County Conservative, to talk about this. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
So I'm going to let you start. I've got some notes, and so do you. But what do you make of this larger issue?
Well, it's really interesting. I'm happy to see this bill moving through the assembly. It was just approved by the Higher Education Committee last night. So it's still in committee. It's still making its rounds through the House. But I think it's a good bill. I wish it was unnecessary. Basically, I wish that we didn't have so many instances where students or student groups. Rights to free speech were not being upheld at universities. And so I think overall this goes a long way in helping to ensure that those protections are there. And it covers all sorts of things, not just, holding speakers on campus, but just, where students can be. Like, they don't have to get solicitation permits if they want to hand out literature, and it gets rid of all these, free speech zones and that sort of thing. So it's really a broadening of that and reiterating that the principal mission of the university is a place to learn. It's a marketplace of ideas. And, you can't do that without a free exchange. So I think it's a really great bill.
It's broadly worded. The bill bans any protest that substantially, and I'm quoting from it now, substantially disrupts the functioning of the constituent institution or substantially interferes with the protected free expression rights of others, including protests and demonstrations that infringe upon the rights of others to engage in and listen to expressive activity. It's not defined, I don't think, what it means to infringe upon the rights of others to engage in or listen to expressive activity. So the wording of the bill, or the bill itself, sounds fine to me. I'm wondering how it's going to be enforced, what that word infringe is going to be taken to mean.
Right. I think that there's a lot of things that this bill covers as far as the enforcement to, there's a, is it Free Expression Committee on
the
Free
Committee
Expression.
On Free Expression. Yeah.
I mean, I
that sounds kind of ironically
comment,
Orwellian, doesn't it?
Well, I don't want to comment too much on how exactly it's going to play out. There are some means of enforcement. In other words, each university in the UNC system has to report to the Board of Governors, and that's how it's going to be. How the universities are going to be held accountable. So I think that, I just, I don't want to comment too much about that. But it sounds a little bit of like what you were saying, like we're going to have committees on free expression and, they have to report all of these different activities or, lack of activities. But the bill could change as it moves through committee.
And that committee doesn't have a lot of direct power. It's just reporting to other people, I think. But
that's what it seems like for now.
I read that passage, the Committee on Free Expression, and I really want to say it was Grover Norquist, but I'm not 100% sure about this. But someone, when the Patriot Act first got proposed back in 2002, said something to the effect of, if it's a bill that they have to refer to by a title like the Patriot Act or make it sound real good in the title, then you probably want to watch out for it. And that was the first thing that popped into my head when I saw the Committee on Free Expression. But
right.
it doesn't seem to have a lot of power. But again, it's right. all on how it's enforced.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's modeled on a bill that or a proposal that was. This is being introduced in other states as well, so it's hardly unique, and it's I think a good place to start. You know, I don't think it's too overreaching in other words. So, you know, hopefully it will just allow you know freedom of expression on campuses. But you know what, I like I said, I think this is good. Free speech on campus is where I think a lot of the attention has gone. But then you see in instances like the so-called Battle of Berkeley on April 15th, just a week and a half or so ago, where it's gotten broader. These battles over free speech have gotten broader than just college students versus other college students. You have, you know, honest to God street fights spilling out into, you know, the area surrounding the campus. And so that's kind of the situation that we now find ourselves in as a society that causes me the most pause.
Yeah.
More than anything that's going on campus, although I think you could fairly say that those are incubators of people who will, you know, potentially be suppressing free speech once they get out and graduated and into the world. So
speaking with Ashley Campbell, the one thing we were talking right before we started, and we've got we'll move into National Poetry Month in a minute, because I know, Ashley, you've got your poem ready to read, and I don't know what it is. So I specifically am not asking anyone in advance before I find out. But we were talking also about the fact that I'm going through all of the books and trying to purge the ones that I haven't read and read them and get them off my shelves.
Yeah,
the one that I'm reading, the one that I happen to be reading right now, is A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, it is reassuring to me. No one has ever, I don't think, read Howard Zinn, and obviously he comes at American history from a particular angle, but the angle isn't what I'm pulling from the book. It is a reassuring book to me right now, because the real big takeaway from that is that all of the clashes that we're seeing today and all of the everything that we're seeing today, from polarization, populism, clashes on the streets, big social movements, big protests, uncertainty on a global scale, all of these things that we're seeing today that are concerning to us have been extremely common throughout American history. So the fight over free speech that we're seeing today is a fight that has been going on in much the same way for pretty much all of American history, which is, at least to me, makes me feel semi-okay, more so than if this were all brand new.
Right. No, I totally agree. I mean, the nothing about this is brand new, and if it wasn't free speech, it could easily be something else. But it's still, you know, history teaches us that these altercations and these escalations, I don't think are gonna go anywhere good. So, you know, while I sympathize with one side more than the other, I still don't think it's necessarily a good idea to meet violence with violence, except in very strict sense of self-defense. But whereas you saw, you know, with the Battle of Berkeley, just, you know, real quick, like I said, it was held about a week and a half ago, or these I guess they're mostly conservative, but not exclusively so, group was holding this free speech rally in Berkeley on this square, and they were able to hold their event. They had a bunch of speakers. But the problem arose when they were trying to leave, and they were surrounded by this group that is called Antifa, or anti-fascist group. They're not just here. They've been around for decades and decades, and began in Europe. So again, as you said, nothing new. And so while the police offered protection, while the more right-leaning conservative group was in the square, once they were trying to leave, the police sort of disappeared, and the Antifa folks started doing their black block thing and throwing little explosives and had broken bottles and knives. They bring weapons to these events, and so the police were standing down, and it was a problem. And then the people who came to the rally, they sort of expected a fight. So they were prepared to fight back, and that's sort of how it turned into a street brawl. I don't know what we do, though. I mean, I think looking back to history is a really good thing to do. But I mean, what do we do in this case? I don't know. I mean, that's my big question, because, you know, now Antifa is saying, well, this didn't go well for us, so next time we need to bring guns. Mm. You know, we need to get firearms training and bring guns. And, you know, I just anticipate, it, like I said, it's not going to end well, and probably somebody is going to freak out and fire into a crowd, and it's just going to be bad. Yeah. So
this is also a point too, where I think we've got to make sure that we're not sort of that we're being ingenuous when we talk about free speech, because free speech is a critically important American value. It's enshrined in the Constitution. It's something that we absolutely have to promote and protect and preserve. I think a lot of the people who are out there saying, oh, let's fight for free speech, fight for free speech, the people who are, for instance, HB 527, and getting back to that, that bill is perfectly fine. Again, we'll see how it's enforced, but if it passes, it's perfectly fine. The same people who are supporting that bill are also supporting a couple of other bills that either are moving or have recently stopped moving through the General Assembly, including one, HB 330, which would give drivers immunity from civil suits if they strike a protester with their car. And HB 249, yeah, which just failed in committee by a 6-5 vote today, but got majority support from the Republican caucus. It failed because of a combination of Democratic and Republican votes in committee. This is a bill that would have identified some forms of protest as economic terrorism and impose criminal penalties to this. And the people who are supporting free speech on campus, free speech on campus, are also supporting these other bills as well. So they're saying they support them because they love free speech. I feel like they're doing it primarily not because they love free speech, but because they're opposed to social movements. And a lot of the people, and neither side is as good as we should be on protecting freedom of speech. The same people who are standing up for free speech today are the same people who voted for Donald Trump, who last year was actively encouraging his supporters while he was standing on the stage at his rallies to physically assault demonstrators. But we all have to be better at this.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely a video that a lot of us saw where
the one guy who was walking up the stairs and got,
sucker punched in the face. And so,
and at no point on either side is this okay. I think we all have a tendency to stand up for free speech when it's our speech, and we need to stand up for free speech when it's our opponent's speech as well.
Well, I mean, I think what I'm really getting at is that there's not enough people who are condemning Antifa, because Antifa sees it as their right to engage in violence to shut down free speech. Mm-hmm. And they're not just anti-fascist. They're hardcore Marxist authoritarian. But they think everybody is literally Hitler, and that gives them the right to shut down speech with violence. And I think that there's this dangerous conflation going on. And perhaps you can see it on both sides, that words are being equated with violence. And so then you have people like Antifa who think that violence is a legitimate response to words. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then you have to wrap in the whole concept of hate speech and what constitutes hate speech and who decides what's hate speech and what should be the punishment for it. And, I mean, you have public figures just this past week, like Howard Dean, who claims that hate speech is not protected by the First Amendment, which of course it is. There's only very small little types of speech like intimidation or threats that aren't protected by the First Amendment. When confronted with evidence that he was wrong, he just doubled down on it and cited court cases incorrectly. But you have folks like Howard Dean who people trust, I guess. There's a certain segment of folks who trust him and others that that speech that's offensive presents a physical threat or it can present an imminent harm. And so they're giving a false impression that there's a kind of speech that's not protected because it's hateful. So I think that that's an interesting effort on his part. And, you know, I think that that's where we need to really draw the line and examine, you know, no matter who is doing it, whether it's lawmakers or whether it's public figures or whether it's, you know, the school board deciding the policy, for example, you know, like the ban on the Confederate flag that's still going on in Orange County schools.
And this is a fight that we've had in Chapel Hill for years and years. Like, we just had Anna Richardson here talking about someone speaking out on behalf of civil rights and getting physically attacked. And we've got a monument to the speaker ban that's on the stone wall on campus from the 1960s. So it goes way back.
Right. I just wish there is more focus on separating. I think we need to have a common definition of safety. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's where I tend to diverge with a lot of people because they think that a symbol can be equated or words can be equated with violence, and I do not see that as violence. You know, so that's where the trouble is because we really have to begin. The two sides, if you want to talk about free speech, what is free speech, what is protected, et cetera, you have to agree on certain definitions like that. Like, what is safety? What is violence? You know, what is free speech? And you have this op-ed that appeared in the New York Times yesterday that's saying that free speech has to constantly be revisited because in the past there weren't people who could engage in free speech. And it's like, no, it's not free speech that needs to be redefined. It's just that we need to, as a society, you know, ensure that everybody gets to participate with the have the same rights. But not free speech doesn't need to be redefined. I mean, that's something that should be understood, but not everybody thinks that way. It's just something that has to be constantly revisited, but who's going to revisit it? Who's going to decide what it is and what it isn't? Who's going to enforce it? So
we got to wrap up, but I want to give you time because it is National Poetry Month, and I've had bring in their poems, and we've only got a couple minutes left this hour, so
okay.
I want to give you a chance to read yours. So take it away. What do we got?
All right. So this is a classic. I think everybody read this in high school, probably. It's just a bit of the love song by J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot. And I'll just start in the middle here and read a little bit of it. Okay. And indeed there will be time to wonder, do I dare and do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair with a bald spot in the middle of my hair. They will say, how his hair is growing thin. My morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin. My necktie rich and modest, but asserted by a simple pen. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute, there's time for decisions and revisions, which a minute will reverse. For I have known them all already, known them all, have known the evenings, mornings, afternoons. I have measured out my life with coffee spoons. I know the voices dying with a dying fall beneath the music from a farther room. So how should I presume? And I have known the eyes already, known them all, the eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. And when I am formulated, sprawling on a pen, when I am pinned and wriggling on the wall, then how should I begin to spit out all the buttons of my days and ways? And how should I presume? And I have known the arms already, known them all, arms that are braceleted and white and bare, but in the lamplight, downed with light brown hair. Is it perfume from a dress that makes me so digress? arms that lie along a table or wrap about a shawl, and how should I then presume, and how should I begin? Shall I say, I have gone at dusk through narrow streets and watched the smoke that rises from the pipes of lonely men in shirt sleeves leaning out of windows. I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the floors of silent seas.
Ashley Campbell, thank you so much.
Thank you.